I'm not a fan of it. I don't like the whole, you know, bravado pushing people around, you know. You know, if they're that brave about things, my players and their players get into a UFC cage and I'll see how brave they are, you know. So we're out there to play football, and that's what I want our guys to do, focus on playing football. And they shouldn't get motivated by things that aren't really that important to us. And like I said, we got sucked in the first half. The second half was much better.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The reason that I'm here is because, you know, the club is seeking change.
He said, well, whether you come or not, you're going to see a completely different first team under me.
You know, my hope and my desire and what I'm going to try and do is give our supporters hope and belief that we're going to embark on something special.
Welcome into the Tottenham Depot. I am your host, Andrew. You can follow me at Ace Stetka. You can follow us at Tottenham Depot. This is episode 163. We're jumping on just a few hours after it is Tottenham Hotspur 3, Brentford 2 at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. A very spicy, eventful, exciting, enthralling game. Someone who is also spicy and eventful and enthralling is Todd, and he is at TC underscore the show. Todd, what's up, my man?
Any day, sir. Any day that you can go down a goal and then hang three on some clown nose celebration stealing douchebags is a good fucking day.
Amen to that. Scott is also with us. He, of course, is always on target, just like James Madison. He is at Scotchy Bird. Scotty, what's up, man?
Well said, man. Well said. Appreciate that solid intro there. Good, man. Good. Wonderful result today. I'm pretty fired up and riled up about what I saw from the opponent today. So super excited to get into this match. We certainly kicked their ass, and it felt good.
We are coming to you midweek because we feel like this is a game I think worth talking about. We're going to touch on a few other things, and we're also going to get you another pod this weekend because that's just kind of what we do. There are more games coming, but we didn't want to let this one go without kind of a little bit of a full-ish pod. You know, this might not go as long as all the other pods, but we want to talk about this one because it was interesting to me, guys. I watched this game a little bit on delay, a little bit, did not watch it live. Sat, took a few notes. I do want to go over some of those things, but TC, in the grand scheme of things, like this is just one of those wacky Premier League games that I kind of enjoyed the resiliency that this club had to come out on top of, right?
Yeah, man, it's standard London derby. Ange and this squad are no strangers to, you know, going down a goal and having to rescue points from losing position. I thought it was a testament to Ange Ball in the sense that, you know, just kind of stay the course. We had several opportunities in the first half to capitalize. We shit the bet. We didn't take those opportunities. And Ange made the necessary changes at halftime to come out and really combat the physical nature of the Brentford side that we saw today, Andrew.
I think that's kind of the big takeaway. And before we even get into the lineup and breaking that stuff down, Scott, like what was your takeaway on that aspect of this? Like for me, this was a game where Spurs for the first 10 or so minutes, maybe a little bit more than that, were really, really good and really dominant. And then Brentford kind of said, all right, no more of this. And they started getting really physical and antagonistic and really trying to fuck shit up. And it really like turned the game around, and then we'll get to what happened after halftime. But like that to me was the whole mantra of this game. It was very stop start, a lot of free kicks, a lot of fouls, a lot of pushing and shoving. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say this almost came to fisticuffs, but it got a little close at points.
Yeah. Honestly, I really think Brentford decided that, and this is credit to Ange and the squad, that the only way to stifle us was to one, mentally affect us, get inside of our heads, and two, disrupt our rhythm and our flow and just not let us find that rhythm and flow, right? So when your tactics is, you know, as much as we talk about dark art, shithousery, all of that, teams do that against teams that they can't figure a solution out for, right? So I take pride in the fact that Brentford came at us like that, and I take pride in the way that we reacted. Again, we'll get to that, but all that said, it worked for them for the first half for sure. We looked like shit. Couldn't get anything going. Our lines were off at the back. Our high line was not succinct enough to keep them from breaking through. And a lot of that's positioning, right? It's not like, oh, you didn't make a tackle or you weren't fast enough, right? With this back line, if we're getting beat over the top, it's all just based on positioning and the four of them not being cohesive. So I think we saw a lot of that. And, you know, as we've discussed, Brentford made it hard for us to be sound there. So it showed, but, you know, obviously we get to it, Ange figured it out. And I love that more than anything.
I think the point you make about Brentford being kind of less than, I mean, I not a lot of people, if you don't pay attention to like the grand scheme of the Premier League season, or you just watch Spurs and don't watch a lot of Brentford, are not the team that we drew 2-2 on the opening day of the season that really looked kind of good. Like, they've been bad this season. They had lost something, like, hadn't won a game until their last win in the game prior to this against, I think it was Nottingham Forest. They hadn't won a game since like December 2nd. They're sitting 15th in the table. Like, they're not having a great run of it. They've been on very bad form. So yeah, maybe mucking it up a little bit was their plan. Let's talk about this lineup, because I think it's kind of interesting. Some of the choices that Ange made from the start, and then we'll talk about the halftime subs, but Madison comes back in to start after getting the substitute appearance on Friday against City. And then Skip comes in for Højbjerg, and we also don't see Brennan Johnson on the sheet originally. It's Werner and Kulusevski out on the wings flanking Richarlison. Nothing about this lineup was all that shocking to me. I definitely thought that, you know, Oliver Skip, the way that he's played in the last handful of matches, probably deserved to start over someone like Højbjerg, even though they can play similar roles. Other than that, like, nothing was that surprising me. I kind of expected Madison to come in. Any surprise for either of you guys on the lineup, or anything you would have? I mean, obviously there's a would have done differently aspect when it comes to the halftime subs here, but from jump, I mm-hmm. thought this looked okay to me.
No, and I mean, I think what this looked like is Ange trying to work Madison and Bentancur back into the side. Us not having Sonny and Saar and Basuma, them rolling Skip out there, and realizing that the way that Brentford was set up was not the game for him. And they made changes. And I respect Ange so much for going, you know what, mate, I got it wrong. Let's switch it up and go from here. Fucking 3 goals and 11 minutes later, there you go.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, and I want to let Scott get in on this midfield. You're talking about that choice specifically. I thought in the first half, Skip was our best midfielder. And it didn't shock me to see him coming off of the pitch at halftime, because I thought something needed to change. But I thought the way that both Bentancur and Madison played, I'll full disclosure, I said I was taking notes. Let me jump into that right here, because at halftime, I wrote down the names of 6 players on our team that I thought looked like they were way more interested in getting into fights and bitching about calls than it was they wanted to play. Like I said, 6 names. And both Madison and Bentancur are 2 of those 6 names. They both did not look interested in playing football, but Ollie Skip, I thought, did. Scott, what was your thoughts on the midfield in that first half?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as how the midfield played, I don't think it was horrible, but it certainly wasn't doing a good enough job of taking control of the match outside of those first X amount of minutes. For me, I really think that there's a pattern starting to develop, at least while Basuma's out. And I think we're going to see PEH in situations where teams are assumably going to be coming at us, like a City, for example. And we're seeing Skip when we anticipate to have much more of the ball and a lot of possession in the final third. I'm not sure as to why that is, right? But it seems to be a bit of a pattern. So I'm not surprised Skip started, but I think the simplistic view of how this all went down is, and it's deeper than this, but Brentford was showing us a lot more of their teeth than we expected. And a guy like Højbjerg seems to be Ange's preference in that situation. So it worked, right? I can't sit here and tell you exactly why it did, but as soon as he made those midfield changes, we looked like a much different team, and our back line was a lot more sound, which always points to the midfield.
Yeah, I think, Andrew, that it can't be overstated that the reason why we're in the position that we're in with teams trying to come out and press us and get under our skin and niggle us is because the Chelsea situation. And you watch what happens when you get under Spurs' skin, you can be unraveled. That's the formula. If you can't beat us, get at us, and we beat ourselves. And so I think that's essentially what Ange said in the postgame. Is that we beat ourselves in the first half, and we were more focused on arguing with the referee than we were about playing football. And so I think that that's an area of opportunity for us. And again, Ange said as much. So I don't think this will be the last time that teams try to punk us like this. And when we're not clinical like we weren't in the first half, it makes it look and feel a lot worse than maybe it was.
Sure. I think that's a great shout, Todd. And I also want to emphasize that the move to bring Højbjerg on also came with the move to bring Brennan Johnson on. And the Brennan Johnson sub for me was really interesting because it moved Kulusevski to a different spot of the field. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been a real key to unlocking some of what this team is able to do offensively. It wasn't just about throwing bodies forward, and it wasn't just about having more attacking minded players on the pitch at the same time. It was about putting Kulusevski as not the widest guy, having to beat guys off the dribble, which he can do, don't get me wrong, but he can't do it all the time. And getting him into a more central position for me in this second half really changed the dynamic of what they were able to do from an attacking standpoint.
I 100% agree with that, Scott. I want to hear what you have to say on this, but I got to make the point. I don't think that has nearly as much to do with Kulusevski as it does to do with James Maddison. And I think Maddison doesn't have the legs to run the game from the center of the park right now. He's still trying to get back into form. And so because of that, like our first 10 minutes, to your very point, Andrew, look great. Got fresh legs, getting up and down the pitch, doing the things we need to do. When you get into that time and that, you know, middle of the first half, and you're starting to see those legs go a little bit, and he's not as sharp. And, you know, anybody who's played and has tried to work their way back into fitness at any level knows exactly what I'm talking about. You expect to make a cut and your body to move in a certain direction at a certain pace, and it's just slower than you want it to be. There's no other way to put it. It just doesn't react as quickly or as sharp as you want it to, and there's no other cure for that other than game time, right? And so shout to Ange for taking a look at that, Andrew, and saying, you know what? I need James a little further up the pitch as opposed to running the show from the middle of the park. Decky, get in here. Brennan, stretch the D. PH, hold it down. And that's what we saw.
Yeah, fully agreed. I think the one thing Kulusevski does better than anybody else in the league statistically is run and run and run and run. So he's got the legs to do exactly what Todd's discussing, and I think it's spot on. He created a lot of breathing room for Maddison. And PH, I got to give him a ton of credit. He came out and did a fabulous job because I hate saying it, but Bentancur is not up to snuff yet. He just doesn't have what we need right now.
You can say it. You don't need to hate to say it because you're not going to get any disagreement from anyone here.
Yeah, it's not a legs issue, man. Yeah, exactly. 100%. I do think, too, it's going to be interesting. You know, we've had – sidebar conversations in the chat, Bentancur or Basuma. We're missing Eve Basuma big time right now. Big time. He's going to be an important player to get back for sure. And Bentancur, I think, will have to continue to fight for minutes up against Basuma. Right? We have one game a week the rest of the season. There's no rotation if there doesn't need to be anymore, right? For these next X amount of games. So it'll be interesting. PH came in, did a phenomenal job and allowed those two to do their thing in front of him. It's a tough thing to do to be a lone six like that, and he did a good job of it.
Can we talk a little bit about Brennan Johnson's performance too? Because I thought it was really good. And in a substitute role and in a, if you want to call it super sub role, I mean, I don't know if a super sub is someone that comes on at half, but like, I thought he was also like, I don't just want to say that the substitutions were good on behalf of Højbjerg and moving Kulusevski more centrally. Like, part of the reason that things were getting done is not just because Kulusevski was moving more centrally, but because Brennan Johnsen was finding as much space almost at times as Timo Werner was the whole match on the other side. And by the way, that's another thing we need to discuss.
Yeah,
he looked really good, and while the finishing and the
he looked really good for Timo Werner.
Well, let's be fair,
dude,
though.
He still sprayed the fucking ball over the back of the net with his left foot when we needed a cross. He's still Timo Werner'd his ass off. He's going to do it every game, but I'll take that for three assists in three matches, Andrew.
Exactly. From the left wing. That's kind of what I was getting to. I don't need him to score. I just need him to produce in this offense. Like, I need him to occasionally assist, but also create space, because that's what his ability to carry the ball wide is doing. It's creating so much more space in the middle. And that's what I thought Brennan was able to do as well. But Brennan also has the ability to get in there and get gritty goals like he did off of Werner's foot. Like, that was really impressive to see.
I agree, Scotty. I think that Brennan Johnsen goal is the prototypical Brennan Johnsen goal that we're going to see through the majority of the rest of the season. That's why we got him. That's why Ange likes him.
Yep, for sure. Those darting runs to the back post, they look easy. They're not. Like, those are not easy goals to score. It's easy in FIFA, right? All day long, you'll put those away. But it's a tough thing to do. So I'm proud of him. First of all, he doesn't deserve any of the stick he's gotten. We all know that, right? It's just silly shit. But we're also in a situation where there are no minutes to share, and Ange has nothing but points in, you know, behind the decisions that he makes. And so if I'm Brennan Johnsen and I realize that with the return of Bissouma and Saar and James Maddison, Kulusevski's not playing in the middle anymore, and I'm competing directly with Decky for minutes on the right hand side. Timo Werner's come in and done a great job on the left hand side. Got the start ahead of me today. Like, it's kind of crunch time for him to prove that he is worthy of minutes as the season, you know, goes on and eventually closes down. And this has not. I need to say this. This has to be totally separated from the stick he's gotten, because that's not at all what is driving what I'm saying right now. All I'm saying is Brennan Johnsen realizes minutes are few and there's a lot of us in the near future, and I just need to show the manager that I deserve to be on the pitch. And he came out and did that today. He you can argue that he's looked better in glimpses than Decky does on the right hand side. Now, a lot of that's because of Decky's play in the midfield, and Decky will never not start ahead of Brennan Johnsen, because Kulusevski is like the fulcrum of our system, and that's why he's played every minute of the league, I believe. So in no way am I saying he should ever start over Kulusevski, and that's not a knock to Johnsen. That's a head nod to Kulusevski, right? But all I'm saying is that Brennan Johnsen knows that it's crunch time for him to prove that he should continue to be on the field. And I think he did a great job of proving that he deserves minutes today. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
No, I 100% agree with you. I don't think, Andrew, that we're going to see a system under Ange where Decky is not featured.
No.
I would agree with that. I think what you're saying, though, Scott, is this team weirdly has options on the wing, which is not something like we would have thought about. I mean, think about the fact that when Sonny's back, you basically have two left wings, two right wings, and Kulusevski, who can play in the middle as well as be that right wing. We understand that Manor Solomon had a little bit of a setback in his return, but eventually you would expect him to be back. Nobody ever mentions Brian Heal, and maybe there's a good reason for that, but Brian Heal is still around. Like, there are,
I wish him well at Brentford.
Yeah.
Brighton, sorry.
Yeah.
there are options at least on these wings. So that's not a bad thing. I totally agree. Can we shift back and have a little bit of a conversation today about Destiny Udogie's performance? I do want to shout out Ange, because in his post-match was extremely complimentary of Destiny Udogie. Actually, let's hear that right now.
mistakes will happen, mate. I mean, he's a young man. He's learning the game. But, you know, he worked hard. He was instrumental in the first goal, I think, driving through. So obviously, he scored, but just his drive. And he continues to present himself. I've got no issues with Destiny. I thought, again, he was good. And, you know, he made a mistake. But, you know what? I made more mistakes than that today, let alone in a career.
And while Ange did exactly the right thing in praising Udogie's performance and not throwing him under the bus, I weirdly thought this was Destiny Udogie's worst performance in a Spurs shirt. Like, the mistakes that he made, the performance on the ball. I know he scored a goal and he gets credit for that, but like, he looked extremely shaky to me. Am I alone in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm alone in that.
Yeah.
I'll bridge the gap and I'll say that he had shaky moments for sure. I mean, directly a fault for two goals, right? You can't look past that. But
how many did they score?
Really, three. Right? No, two.
No, they scored two. Both the goals they scored were a direct result of Destiny Udogie giving the ball away. That's kind of what I'm saying.
You're right. And so he had shaky moments, but he also created a goal. He was involved in the second goal, right? Even though not super directly. He played really well at times. And for me, a 21-year-old who, in his first season in the Premier League, shit happens. Made two big mistakes, scored a great goal, whatever.
But before I let you praise him, TC, and I do want to let you praise him, let me just say, I'm not down on Destiny Udogie overall. I think Destiny Udogie's great. And like, I'm going to expect as a young player for him to have games like this. I just thought,
honestly,
and I also think it speaks to the level of expectation that he's presented for us in his first full season, that I'm like, oh, this was not a good performance. And it's a performance in which he scored in, like, that you don't get that.
I hear you. The second goal I'm going to put on PH as much as anybody else. That's just me. The one thing that I want to say about Destiny Udogie is his game against Chelsea was worse than this one, if we want to point out Destiny Udogie bad games.
Sure.
And he scored a fucking goal today. So the other thing is with Ange, Ange is going to tell you, like, okay, you give the ball away, they score a goal, that's fine, go give me a goal. And that's fucking exactly what he did. So I think that, like, he praised Destiny Udogie as he rightfully should for, you know, being a professional and doing all the things that he needed to do and the performance that he's had throughout the year, which is standard Ange stuff. But what I heard between the lines more than anything else was him praising the character of a kid who had a tough day at the office and still managed to put in a 7 out of 10 performance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was big. I mean, I agree. I just thought the level of expectation for Destiny Udogie and Pedro Porro, we've talked about them both ad nauseum, like how good the fullbacks have been. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't see, you haven't seen a lot of those types of mistakes like he made today. And I understand what you're saying about the second goal, it being a little bit on PH, but like, he literally just didn't see Ivan Toney cherry picking. He wasn't really cherry picking. It's not like he was, he was in a well offside position and got the ball handed to him. It was very awkward. I think the cameraman was even fooled for a moment as to what the hell was going on. But it's awkward to see those types of mistakes is all I'm saying.
Well, I agree. And I also think it's worth pointing out, just like City did last week, I think Brentford had a tactical plan around those inverted fullbacks, because both of them had neither of them were man-marked, but what I was noticing that there was constantly a box around each of them. Mm-hmm. And they were dealt with. They were totally muted in the final third, and pressure was put on them in the defensive third, and credit Brentford for that too. I think one of the things that we're going to see become a pattern is teams really building their entire game plan around those inverted fullbacks, because it creates so much just dysfunction for the opponent defensively, and so many passing patterns that teams just aren't used to seeing. Triangles that you usually don't see on the field anywhere, and those have a real impact. So yeah, I think maybe what I'm saying is Porro and Udogie are always going to have a hill to climb, whoever they're playing, I think, going forward, and that'll be on them to figure that out.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit and say that was Thomas Frank's game plan going in. Ange countered at halftime by bringing on a stalwart defensive six and an over-the-top winger. And Timo Werner had probably the best game in a Tottenham shirt, save the Timo Werner moments. Yep. And Brennan Johnson comes on and we're able to flip it around and old buddy sticks it in the back of the net. And we're finding space over the top. And that really is the pick your poison moment. Do you want to get beat by the overload in the midfield with the inverted fullbacks, or do you want to get beat over the top, having your center backs go out wide against Brennan Johnson and Timo Werner where they're able to run at you? I don't know, man.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I think all the more reason to continue to sing Ange's praises, right? Which we'll continue to do. But he made an amazing adjustment at halftime. It was just two completely different performances.
Yeah, I totally agree. And in my notes, literally wrote down, wow, the Brennan Johnson and PEH calls are massive. Like what a way to change the game, and what a trigger to pull in that moment where, you know, it's 1-0 but you've been getting, and this is kind of the grand scheme of this game to me. It all came down to Brentford getting chippy and letting their physicality kind of rattle us a little bit in that first half, and Ange saying, no more. We're changing this game. We're changing it right now. We're not going to wait until the 75th minute and see if I can't chuck on a few extra attackers and make something different. I mean, he saw a problem and he decided to solve it right then and there. And I think that's all credit to Ange. And
dude,
I was pumped about it.
That gives me such confidence as a Spurs fan. Like, to think about the amount of matches in the inverse that we sat under Conte or Mourinho or even Poch, to be fair.
So you're going to say, or even Poch.
This is not working. What are we going to do? And we come out and beat our head against the same fucking wall for another 15 minutes until maybe they bring on Eric Dier off the bench or something. Like, I mean, it was never like a sub where you looked at and were like, oh my gosh, there's the teeth that we were looking for, or there's the shoring up that we needed. It always felt reactionary and like old Mother Hubbardy, like, well, I don't really have anybody else, so I guess you go ahead and hop up there now. And like, I felt like with Ange, never reactionary. It's always a calculated decision. And maybe that's just his stoic nature, but that's how it feels.
Yeah, I'm totally on board. It's been a pleasure to watch. So Neil Maupe doing the dart celebration after scoring and then getting it thrown right back in his face. James Madison to TNT Sports after the match joked that Maupe hasn't scored enough goals to have his own celebration, so he had to steal Madison's, is perhaps one of the best walk-off lines after a match that you can have. Just fantastic work. And as much as I, and for that matter, Ange, was on James Madison I watched this match and I took notes, and then I started to prep a little bit for the pod that we were going to do. And I then listened to Ange's presser and I had to cross out like three different lines from my notes because Ange said them in the press conference. Like, that's honestly how I felt. And he dug out James Madison for not playing football in the first half, for talking too much to the referee. Like, it was so wild where my brain was with Ange. And I'm not saying that to praise myself as thinking like Ange, but it was truly wild. And then for him to drop that line, all is forgiven. This is our spicy, feisty English midfield and son of a bitch that is out there just like kicking ass and taking names. And while I didn't love the first half and didn't love everything I've taught, it's the same shit that Richie was doing, Romero, Poro got into it. Like, all these guys I had written down to chew out after we inevitably lost this game 1-0, the whole thing changed. And it's a credit to Ange, it is, but it's a credit to those players too. And it was a joy to watch, and it's why we wanted to bang out a podcast.
I want to shout out Cootie Romero for being the cooler head that prevailed on that pitch, put in a 7.5 captain's performance. Truly deserved the armband in front of James Madison today and showed us exactly why. Didn't even get it booked in a match like this.
He didn't. Andrew. Yeah, that's it. You know what? I haven't noticed that until just now. The only two bookings that starters took on today were Kulusevski and then Jamie Donnelly, and his brief sub appearance got one late for
dude, and that was such a dog shit card for Jamie.
Perhaps being a little bit overmatched. Yeah,
you know what? I'm proud of that yellow card Jamie Donnelly took. That it's good for his character. Just dump somebody. I liked it, but yeah, honestly, is there a single one of you, either the two of you or any listener, that didn't think, oh shit, Romero's going to kill one of these guys and get sent off? Because we 100%. All had that thought. We all
honestly,
had
his body what? Language. His body language the entire time was the opposite of that. He was letting Mickey do the heavy tackling. I don't know if you noticed that today. Romero's tackles were all standing. Not all, but by and large, Romero's tackles were standing, and Mickey got on his face, and it was awesome.
Dude, it had been hard for that guy to not slide a couple of times for sure.
Oh, so, man, the amount of times he wanted to lay out Neil Mappe, I can only imagine.
That makes me nervous, too, though, seeing Mickey put in those slide tackles, because a giraffe isn't supposed to do that kind of thing with its legs. Like, sure, that looks very uncomfortable. And, like, he that guy, when that boy goes down, I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's a big sack of potatoes going down.
He's a large gentleman. Let's just call it those, what it is. But he's so graceful.
Yeah, he is. He's our graceful giraffe, our graceful cheetah-speeded giraffe. Guys, Everton is up next on Saturday, and look, we're not getting Sonny back. They advanced. We're not getting Bissouma back, but we may be getting Pop Monte Sarr back, at least in some kind of role. He's supposed to return the team on Thursday after Senegal go out of AFCON. But the other two still playing in their international competitions. Sarr perhaps on the way back, and I guess the only other real like kind of big thing to touch on is that, you know, we're recording this, as I said, just hours after the match on the 31st. Transfer deadline day is on the 1st. By the time we're, you know, 24 hours from now, transfer window will be closed. Ange said in his pre-match press conference prior to Brentford that it was unlikely that anything else was going to happen in or out for this club. He said after the match today that it's even more unlikely now than it was yesterday when he had his pre-match press conference that anything would be happening. So a brief word on what this club has done in this window. Obviously, if anything actually does trickle through outgoings or anything, we'll cover it at the weekend, but I'm totally down with this window. I think it was a step in the right direction. Obviously the business was done early, and the business thus far has looked important enough to, I think, carry this team into, you know, a really good second half of the season as they get healthier and get stronger with guys returning to the lineup.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, we filled two need positions within the first week of the window. We undoubtedly strengthened our team, did so at a bargain rate, like high upside, low risk on both of those deals. And we got the outgoings that we needed to have. We got fucking Eric Dyer off the books. Are you kidding me right now? I'm elated, Andrew. Addition by subtraction and addition by addition. That's a good window in January. Fuck Steve Hitchin.
Yes. Yes. No, I couldn't agree with Todd more, though. A great window. We accomplished everything we needed to accomplish. We accomplished it early. I still would love to have seen an attacking midfielder come in. I'll say it one more time. Grumblings of us sniffing around Gallagher still late in the window, right? And I think that happens tomorrow, but that's the type of signing that I would love to see us bring through before the window closes. But outside of that, I think we've been absolutely perfect. 99% job accomplished, and we'll look forward to continuing to watch this team build next summer.
We will indeed. Just a brief word on the Tottenham Hotspur women. Last time we checked in with you all, they were facing Man City on Sunday. They lost that match 2-0. Of course, Bonnie Shaw scored again because that's what happens, but it is better than the 7-0 result that Spurs suffered at the hands of City last time out. They also made a move today before the women's window closed, the transfer of Angra James to Seattle Reign, an outgoing for them. So we're going to cover a lot more of the women's team when Caroline is back with us, hopefully at the weekend. They play Liverpool away on Sunday, while the men, as I mentioned, are in action away to Everton on Saturday. So two trips up to Merseyside for the men and the women this weekend. And we are going to return to you then to kind of recap all of it. If there is any weird transfer news that trickles in on deadline day, as Scott mentioned, there could be maybe an outgoing or two, who knows. But honestly, the other thing that we've read a lot about in recent days is that, you know, some of these outgoings that have been discussed for Spurs, you don't really want to weaken your youth side. And while it's not like super important for the youth sides to be winning, they are performing well, and you don't really want to break up that momentum amongst some players that could be getting some good, healthy experience at that level as well. So there still could be an outgoing or two to come, but we will cover all of that at the weekend. Until then, for Scott, he is at Scott G Bird. For Todd, at TC underscore Cachot. I have been your host, Andrew. I am at Astetka. Be sure to follow us at Tottenham Depot and on all the social medias, and check out our YouTube page as well. Until the weekend, we will talk to you then. As always, come on, you Spurs.